Chapter 14. Prax. Prax didn't understand how near he was to collapse until he ate. Canned chicken with some kind of spicy chutney, soft no-crumb crackers of the type usually used in zero-G environments, a tall glass of beer. He wolfed it down, his body suddenly ravenous and unstoppable. After he finished vomiting, the woman who seemed to take care of all the small practical matters on the ship. He knew her name was Naomi, but he kept wanting to call her Cassandra, because she looked like an intern by that name he'd worked with 3 years earlier. Switched him to a thin protein broth that his atrophied gut could actually handle. Over the course of hours, his mind started coming back. It felt like waking up over and over, without falling asleep in between. Sitting in the hold of Holden's ship, he'd find himself noticing the shift in his cognition, how much more clearly he could think, and how good it felt to come back to himself. And then, a few minutes later, some set of sugar-deprived ganglia would struggle back to function, and it would all happen again. And with every step back toward real consciousness, he felt the drive growing, pushing him toward the door that Strickland and May had gone through. "Doctor, huh?" the big one, Amos, said. "I got my degree here. The university's really good. Lots of grant money. Or, now, I suppose, there used to be. I was never much for formal education myself." The relief ship's mess hall was tiny and scarred by age. The woven carbon filament walls had cracks in the enameling, and the tabletop was pitted from years, maybe decades, of use. The lighting was a thin spectrum shifted toward pink that would have killed any plants living under it in about 3 days. Amos had a canvas sack filled with formed plastic boxes of different sizes, each of which seemed to have a firearm of some kind inside. He had unrolled a square of red felt and disassembled a huge matte-black pistol on it. The delicate metal parts looked like sculpture. Amos dipped a cotton swab into a bright blue cleaning solution and rubbed it gently on a silver mechanism attached to a black metal tube, polishing metal plates that were already bright as a mirror. Prax found his hands moving toward the disassembled pieces, willing them to come together, to be already cleaned and polished and remade. Amos pretended not to notice in a way that meant he was very much aware. "I don't know why they would have taken her," Prax said. "Dr. Strickland has always been great with her. He'd never hurt her. I don't think he'd hurt her."
"Yeah, probably not," Amos said.
He dipped the swab into the cleaning fluid again and started on a metal rod with a spring wrapped around it. "I really need to get there," Prax said. He didn't say, "Every minute here is a minute that they could be hurting May, that she could be dying, or getting shipped off-world." He tried to keep his words from sounding like a whine or a demand, but they seemed to come out as both.
"Getting ready is the shitty part," Amos said, as if agreeing to something. "You want to get right out into it right the fuck now. Get it over with."
"Well, yes," Prax said.
"I get that," Amos said. "It's no fun, but you've got to get through it. Going in without your gear ready, you might as well not go. Plus which, the girl's been gone for how long now?"
"Since the fighting, since the mirror came down."
"Chances of another hour making much difference are pretty small, right?"
"But..."
"Yeah," Amos said with a sigh. "I know. This is the tough part. Not as bad as waiting for us to get back, though. That's gonna suck even worse."
Amos put down the swab and started fitting the long black spring back over the spindle of bright metal. The alcohol fumes of the cleaning solution stung Prax's eyes.
"I'm waiting for you," Prax said. "Yeah, I know," Amos said. "And I'll make sure we're real quick about it. The captain's a real good guy, but he can get kind of distracted sometimes. I'll keep him on point. No trouble."
"No," Prax said. I don't mean I'm waiting for you when you go to that door. I mean I'm waiting for you right now. I'm waiting to go there with you. Amos slid the spring and spindle into the shell of the gun, twisting it gently with his fingertips. Prax didn't know when he'd risen to his feet. How many gunfights have you been in? Amos asked. His voice was low and wide and gentle. Because I've been in... Shit, this'll be 11 for me. Maybe 12 if you count the one time when the guy got up again as a different fight. Point is, if you want your little girl safe, you don't want her in a tunnel with a guy firing a gun who doesn't know what he's doing. As if in punctuation, Amos slid the gun together. The metal clacked. I'll be fine, Prax said. But his legs were trembling, just standing up. Amos held up the gun. This ready to fire? Amos asked. Sorry? If you pick this gun up right now, point it at a bad guy, pull the trigger, does it go bang? You just watch me put it together. Dangerous or safe? Prax opened his mouth, then closed it. An ache just behind his sternum grew a notch worse. Amos started to put the gun down. Safe, Prax said. You sure about that, Doc? You didn't put any bullets in it. It's safe. You sure? Yes. Amos frowned at the gun. Well, yeah, that's right, he said. But you're still not going. Voices came from the narrow hallway from the airlock. Jim Holden's voice wasn't what Prax had thought it would be. He'd expected him to be serious, grave. Instead, even during the times like now, when the distress clipped his vowels short and tightened his voice, there was a lightness to him. The woman's voice, Naomi, not Cassandra, wasn't deeper, but it was darker. Those are the numbers, she said. They're wrong, Holden said, ducking into the mess. They've got to be wrong. It doesn't make sense. What's the word, Captain? Amos asked. Security is not going to be any use, Holden said. The locals are stretched too thin, trying to keep the place from straight-out catastrophe. Which is why maybe we shouldn't be going in with guns drawn, Naomi said. Please, can we not have that conversation again right now? Her mouth hardened, and Amos pointedly looked at the gun, polishing the parts that already shone. Prax had the sense of walking in on a much longer conversation. This guy who grabs a gun first and talks later, Naomi said. You didn't used to be him. You aren't him. Well, I need to be him today, Holden said in a voice that closed the subject. The silence was uncomfortable. What's wrong with the numbers? Prax asked. Holden looked at him, confused. You said there was something wrong with the numbers. They're saying that the death rate's going up, but that's got to be wrong. The fighting was, what, one day, day and a half? Why would things be getting worse now? No, Prax said. That's right. It's the cascade. It'll get worse. What's the cascade? Naomi asked. Amos slid the pistol into its box and hauled out a longer case. A shotgun, maybe. His gaze was on Prax, waiting. It's the basic obstacle of artificial ecosystems. In a normal evolutionary environment, there's enough diversity to cushion the system when something catastrophic happens. That's nature. Catastrophic things happen all the time. But nothing we can build has the depth. One thing goes wrong, and there's only a few compensatory pathways that can step in. They get overstressed, fall out of balance. When the next one fails, there are even fewer paths, and then they're more stressed. It's a simple, complex system. That's the technical name for it. Because it's simple, it's prone to cascades. And because it's complex, you can't predict what's going to fail. Or how. It's computationally impossible. Holden leaned against the wall, his arms folded. It was still odd seeing him in person. He looked the same as he had on the screens, and he also didn't.
Ganymede Station, Holden said, is the most important food supply and agricultural center outside Earth and Mars. It can't just collapse. They wouldn't let it. People come here to have their babies, for God's sake.
Prax tilted his head. A day before, he wouldn't have been able to explain this. For one thing, he wouldn't have had the blood sugar to fuel thought. For another, he wouldn't have had anyone to say it to. It was good to be able to think again, even if it was only so he could explain how bad things had become.
Ganymede's dead, Prax said. The tunnels will probably survive, but the environmental and social structures are already broken. Even if we could somehow get the environmental systems back in place, and really we can't without a lot of work, how many people are going to stay here now? How many would be going to jail? Something's going to fill the niche, but it won't be what was here before.
Because of the cascade, Holden said.
Yes, Prax said. That's what I was trying to say before, to Amos. It's all going to fall apart. The relief effort's going to make the fall a little more graceful, maybe, but it's too late. It's too late, and since May's out there, and we don't know what's going to break, I have to go with you.
Prax, Cassandra said. No, Naomi. Maybe his brain wasn't really up to full power even now.
Strickland and that woman, even if they think they can keep her safe, they can't. You see? Even if they're not hurting her, even if they're not, everything around them is going to fall apart. What if they run out of air? What if they don't understand what's happening?
I know this is hard, Holden said, but shouting about it won't help.
I'm not shouting. I'm not shouting. I'm just telling you that they took my little girl away and I need to go and get her. I need to be there when you open that door, even if she's not there. Even if she's dead, I need to be the one who finds her.
The sound was crisp and professional and oddly beautiful. A magazine slipping into a pistol.
Prax hadn't seen Amos take it back out of its box, but the dark metal was in the man's huge hand, dwarfed by his fingers. While he watched, Amos chambered around. Then he took the gun by its barrel, careful to keep it pointing at the wall, and held it out.
But I thought, Prax said, you said I wasn't...
Amos stretched his arms out another half inch. The gesture was unmistakable.
Take it.
Prax took it. It was heavier than it looked.
Amos? Holden said. Did you just give him a loaded gun?
Doc needs to go, Captain, Amos said with a shrug. So I'm thinking he should probably go.
Prax saw the look that passed between Holden and Naomi. We might want to talk about that decision-making process, Amos, Naomi said, shaping the words carefully.
You betcha, Amos said. Soon as we get back.
Prax had been walking through the station for weeks as a native, a local, a refugee with nowhere to flee. He'd gotten used to how the hallways looked, how people's eyes slid over him in case he'd try to lay his burdens on them. Now that Prax was fed and armed and part of a group, the station had become a different place. People's eyes still slid across them, but the fear was different, and hunger fought against it. Holden and Amos didn't have the gray of malnutrition or the haunted look around their eyes of seeing everything they thought was immutable collapse. Naomi was back at the ship, hacked into the local security network and ready to coordinate the three of them in case they got split up. For the first time perhaps in his life, Prax felt like an outsider. He looked at his hometown and saw what Holden would see. A huge hallway with paints and dyes worked into the ice up high on the wall. The lower half, where people might accidentally touch it, covered in thick insulation. Ganymede's raw ice would strip the flesh from bone with even the briefest contact. The hallway was too dark now, the floodlights beginning to fail. A wide corridor Prax had walked through every day he was at school was a dim chamber, filled with the sounds of dripping water as the climate regulation failed. The plants that weren't dead were dying, and the air was getting the stale taste at the back of his throat that meant the emergency recyclers would be coming on soon. Should be coming on soon. Had better. Holden was right, though. The thin-faced, desperate people they passed had been food scientists and soil technicians, gas exchange experts and agricultural support staff. If Ganymede Station died, the cascade wouldn't stop here. Once the last load of food lifted off, the belt, the Jovian system, and the myriad long-term bases in their own orbits around the sun would have to find a different way to get vitamins and micronutrients for their kids. Prax started wondering whether the bases on the far planets would be able to sustain themselves. If they had full hydroponics rigs and yeast farms and nothing went wrong. It was a distraction. It was grasping anything other than the fear of what would be waiting behind that door. He embraced it.
"Hold up, all y'all."
The voice was low and rough and wet, like the man's vocal cords had been taken out and dragged through mud. He stood in the center of the ice tunnels, intersecting before them. Military police body armor, two sizes too small, straining to keep his bulk in. His accent and build said he was Martian. Amos and Holden paused, turned, looking everywhere but at the man before them. Prax followed their gazes. Other men lurked, half-hidden around them. The sudden panic tasted like copper.
"I make six," Holden said. "What about the guy with the gray pants?" Amos asked. "Okay, maybe seven. He's been with us since we left the ship, though. He might be something else."
"Six is still more than three," Naomi said in their ears. "You want me to send backup?"
"Hot damn, we've got backup?" Amos asked.
"Gonna have Super Teyaporn come down and talk them all to death?"
"We can take them," Prax said, reaching for the pistol in his pocket. "We can't let anyone..." Amos's wide hand closed over his own, keeping the gun in his pocket and out of sight.
"These aren't the ones you shoot," Amos said. "These are the ones you talk to."
Holden stepped toward the Martian. The ease with which he held himself made the assault rifle on his shoulders seem almost innocuous. Even the expensive body armor he wore didn't seem at odds with his casual smile.
"Hey," Holden said. "There a problem, sir?"
"Might be," the Martian drawled. "Might not. That's your call."
"I'll take not," Holden said. "Now, if you'll excuse us, we'll be on..."
"Slow down,"
the Martian said, sidling forward. His face was vaguely like someone Prax had seen before on the tube and never particularly remarked.
"You're not from around here."
"I am," Prax said. "I'm Dr. Praxidiki Mung, chief botanist on the RMD's Southern Soy Farm Project. Who are you?"
"Let the captain do this," Amos said.
"But he's pretty good at it."
"I'm thinking you're part of the relief work," the Martian said. "Long way from the docks. Looks like you lost your way. Maybe you need an escort back to where it's safe."
Holden shifted his weight. The assault rifle just happened to slide forward a few inches, not at all provocatively.
"I don't know," Holden said. "We're pretty well protected. I think we can probably take care of ourselves. What kind of fee are you, escorts asking?"
"Well now, I'll count three of you. Call it 100 in Martian scrip, 5 local.
How about you follow us down, and I'll arrange passage for all of you off this ice ball."
The Martian's jaw dropped.
"That's not funny," he said.
But the mask of power and confidence had slipped. Prax had seen the hunger and desperation behind it.
"I'm going to an old tunnel system," Holden said. "Someone abducted a bunch of kids right before everything went to hell. They took them there. Doc's kid was one of the ones that got snatched.
We're going to get her back and politely ask how they knew all this was coming down. Might be resistance. I could use a few people who know what end of the gun points forward.
You're fucking with me, the Martian said.
From the corner of his eye, Prax saw one of the others step forward, a thin woman in cheap protective weave.
We're OPA, Amos said, then nodded at Holden. He's James Holden of the Rocinante.
Holy shit, the Martian said. You are. You're Holden.
It's the beard, Holden said. My name's Wendell. Used to work for Pinkwater Security before the bastards took off, left us here. The way I figure, that voids the contract. You want to pick up some professional firepower, you ain't gonna find better than us.
How many you got?
6, counting me.
Holden looked over at Amos. Prax felt Amos shrug as much as saw it. The other man they'd been talking about was unrelated after all.
All right, Holden said. We tried to talk to local security, but they didn't give us the time of day. Follow me, back us up, and I give you my word you'll get off Ganymede.
Wendell grinned. He'd had one of his incisors dyed red with a small black and white design on it.
Anything you say, boss, he said. Then, lifting his gun, form up. We got us a new contract, people. Let's get it done.
The whoops came from all around them. Prax found the thin woman beside him, grinning and shaking his hand like she was running for office. Prax blinked and smiled back, and Amos put his hand on Prax's shoulder.
See? Told you. Now let's get moving.
The hallway was darker than it had seemed in the video. The ice had thin melt channels like pale veins, but the frost covering them was fresh. The door looked like any other of 100 they'd passed on the way in. Prax swallowed. His stomach ached. He wanted to scream for May, to call her name and hear her call back.
Okay, Naomi said in his ear. I've got the lock disabled. Whenever you guys are ready.
No time like the present, Holden said. Open it up.
The seal around the door hissed. The door opened.